Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to talk about some of the points Candace Owens made about these mysterious flights of Egyptian planes. I'd like to give my 2 cents worth about that. I don't think enough attention has been drawn to the fact that Dassault, the mega French Aerospace Corporation, spelled Dassault, is involved. Dassault is to France what Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, General Electric, and the other mega defense so-called contractors in America are. In fact, if anything, Dassault may have more power in France relative to Lockheed in America, if that's possible, and I'll get into some of that. Also, one of the other corporations mentioned as being involved was DuPont, which is interesting because DuPont was a major war profiteer in the First World War, and they actually went before a Senate inquiry to find out if they were really into war profiteering in World War I. Clearly they were. And then come World War II, DuPont gets the contract from the Army Corps of Engineers to build the pilot plant plutonium separation facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and later the mega Hanford plutonium production separation facility or facilities in Hanford, Washington. So we're talking about two mega corporations right off the bat, Dassault as well as DuPont. And Dassault, it should be added, they have a big say in French foreign and domestic policy. They are a state within a state, that should be pointed out. And I'll elaborate more on that. And also the Foreign Legion and the GIGN alleged involvement. I know some people in the former Special Forces field, and some of these people, I actually watch their shows and like the content they put out. They questioned the validity, let's say, of GIGN being involved. I'll have my points of view about that. GIGN stands for, and I'm going to butcher this because it's in French, Groupe d'Intervention de la Gendarmerie Nationale, also known in English as Gendarmerie Intervention Group. And they have been around for a long time, and they are one of the elite hostage rescue counter-terrorist units, tier one units, in my estimation, in the world, bar none. And I will talk more about that. There seems to be this notion they only came into prominence with the spectacular hostage rescue in Marseille in 1994, but that's not the case. GIGN has rescued over 600 hostages, and they have some of the best shooters in the world, again, bar none. They've had lots of experience battling domestic and foreign terrorists. They've been battling leftist terrorists, Action Direct. They've been battling Corsican separatist groups, they've been battling Islamic militant groups, the list goes on. In the 1960s and the 1970s, Europe was a hotbed of terrorist activity. A lot of it socialist, communist fomented. Of course, we have the whole NATO Gladio aspect as well, but for our purposes, I'm going to stick to the work the GIGN has done domestically and overseas. There is this notion amongst people, ex-special forces, and they don't seem to know that GIGN actually, along with the 13th French Foreign Legion Demi-Brigade, both of these units are mentioned by Candace, they took part in a hostage rescue, which I talked about in the past, known as the 1976 Loyada hostage rescue. This occurred on February 3rd, 1976, 31 French children were kidnapped in Djibouti by, surprise, surprise, Somali terrorists. So as far back as 1976, GIGN and the same unit of the 13th French Foreign Legion Demi Brigade have worked together to rescue hostages. That's an important point to make. I'm looking at this zoomed out from a historical perspective. I mentioned at the outset that Dassault Industries was a state within a state. In this scenario, they have either sold or leased to the Egyptian government an aircraft, probably one of those Falcon jet business private jets that they manufacture. It would have included a maintenance contract, and they would have made available, as per the terms of the contract, a number of maintenance facilities. It should be understood that just because on paper it seems as if Dassault sold or leased the jet to the Egyptian government, it doesn't mean that the crew and the pilots were Egyptian. In all likelihood, they were either French, they were French Dassault employees, members of the French Air Force, or Israelis. Once again, there is a historical precedence for this. Taiwanese pilots flew U-2 spy missions over communist China on behalf of the Americans. During World War II, there was actually a plan afoot to utilize the services of the Central Aircraft Manufacturing Company, founded by American businessman William Pauley, who had ties with Curtiss Wright Aircraft Company in America, ties with high levels of the American military establishment. There was actually a plan afoot to use Central Aircraft Manufacturing Company, known as CAMCO, to transport American bombers to China and assemble them, train Chinese pilots, and launch from China to bomb Japan. And also, you look at the French Foreign Legion 2nd Parachute Regiment, 2nd REP, their combat jump into Kolwezi in 1978, May 1978, Operation Leopard, Kolwezi Zaire, Angolan separatists trained by Cubans and Soviet and Chinese advisors had invaded. They were known as the Congolese National Liberation Army, and they began massacring Europeans, mostly Belgians, but also French, and basically any white people they could find. They went on a rampage. And the French, impatient, because the Belgians didn't seem to be doing anything about it, decided to drop the French Foreign Legion. What a lot of people don't know, and which is not very well known today, is the very first paratroopers to jump out of those transports were actually members of the United States Air Force. They were combat controllers, or CCTs. There are even reports, which are very difficult to find these days, that the planes, the C-130 Hercules planes, were actually crewed by United States Air Force personnel. In fact, I distinctly remember reading about this in a book dedicated to the history of mercenary operations around the world. And what is the French Foreign Legion, but a mercenary force working on behalf of the French government? Point of relevance is there have been many times in the past when foreign nationals were utilized in operations to give some degree of plausible deniability, and that seems to have happened with Dassault selling or leasing a private jet aircraft to the Egyptian government, but the odds of Egyptians actually flying that plane are slim and none, in my considered opinion. The powers that be, namely the French government and the Israelis, would never trust the Egyptians for such a delicate operation. They know from bitter experience what's happened when the Egyptians attempted their own special operations. In February 1978, Egyptian special forces raided Larnaca International Airport near Larnaca, Cyprus, in an attempt to intervene in a hijacking. They actually got into a gunfight with the Cyprian security forces, and they attempted to rescue hostages on an airplane. It turned out to be a disaster. A number of hostages were killed, and it severed diplomatic relations between the Egyptians and the Cypriots for several years. So, point being is that why would the Israelis or the French, for that matter, rely on the Egyptians in any kind of a sensitive mission that has so many political, international overtones and implications? So when you think of the Egyptian plane, think of it as being flown by French and or Israelis under contract, a maintenance service supply contract with Dassault, one of the most powerful aerospace companies, defense contractors in the world, which means all the resources Dassault has everywhere throughout the Mediterranean, throughout North America. They have a number of offices in North America, throughout Europe, will do what they can to help this mission proceed successfully. It should be pointed out that Dassault has its own dedicated intelligence and security and black ops capability. Yes, they absolutely do. Likewise, whenever you think about the French intelligence services, automatically think about their long-standing ties to the French criminal underworld and all the resources the latter have, the Corsican connection, the Marseille, mafia, etc., etc. The shooter of JFK turned out, according to some sources, to be a Frenchman. Notice the flight plan of this Egyptian plane. It lands at places like Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha is the headquarters of Strategic Command. Then they also land at Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. Now, when I hear this mysterious Egyptian plane cutout, think of it as a cutout because it's not going to be crewed by Egyptians. Should be pointed out that Dassault bought out Atlantic Aviation in Wilmington, Delaware. Now, it just so happens there happens to be an Atlantic Aviation facility in Omaha, Nebraska. Go figure. Now, Omaha, Nebraska just happens to be the home of STRATCOM, which is the home for Strategic Command. For many years, it was known as Strategic Air Command, but they combined the triad of manned bombers, missiles, and the submarine ballistic missile launch capability. They've kind of combined the headquarters there at STRATCOM to oversee a global nuclear war. So when I hear STRATCOM, I'm thinking secure comms, secure communications. When I hear Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota, which also is part of Strategic Command because they have nuclear missiles there in the vast area around Minot Air Force Base. Again, I think of secure comms. I think of logistical support. I think of latest updates as far as intelligence and what have you, access to satellite communications, information. They would have SCIFs there. Sensitive compartmented information facilities where some of these spooks from the Egyptian plane can go into. All they got to do, folks, is just wave a badge around, maybe have one or two token Americans there so they don't have to hear these French accents or Israeli accents. They'll just wave these badges around and then just browbeat and bluster and threaten anyone who gets in their way. Okay, I'm going to make a phone call, then. You're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your stripes. You're going to be demoted, whatever, thrown into Fort Leavenworth prison, whatever. They're going to get their way. So, interesting how that Egyptian plane is landing at STRATCOM off at Air Force Base, Omaha, Nebraska. or at any rate, a private airfield owned by Atlantic Aviation that happens to be in Omaha is landing at Minot Air Force Base, another highly sensitive base. Think of comms, think of SCIFs, think of logistical support. Also, it should be added and may or may not be connected in some way, but there has always been an entrenched, hardcore mind control cult abuse network in Omaha. If you've read John DeCamp's classic book, The Franklin Cover-Up, he specifically mentions Offutt Air Force Base as one of the places where children were trafficked to, mind controlled, abused, etc. If memory serves, don't quote me on this, but I think Omaha slash Offutt Air Force Base was one of the places that General Michael Aquino used to go to at times. So keep that point in mind. I'm going to talk now about the Haas's rescue pulled off by GIGN and the French Foreign Legion in Djibouti in 1976. This is important and relevant to what's going on today. Okay, this is from the website foreignlegion.info/1976 Loyada Haas's rescue mission, and I'll read it at length to give background, historical background to what happened. 1976 Loyada Haas's rescue mission. In early February 1976, two French Foreign Legion units were involved in an important hostage rescue mission in Loyada, a small village located at the border between modern-day Djibouti and Somalia in the Horn of Africa. Their objective was to save 31 French children kidnapped by local militants from a pan-Somali guerrilla organization supported by the Somali government. Although the Foreign Legion was conducting such an exceptional anti-terrorist mission for the very first time, the Legionnaires did well. Prelude to the mission. In the Horn of Africa in 1896, France officially established French Somaliland. The small territory was an important strategic place known as a gate to the Red Sea with the Suez Canal, the latter connecting the Mediterranean Sea with the Indian Ocean. In 1960, neighboring Somalia, then a British colony, gained its independence. The new state laid claim to French Somaliland. 3 years later, in 1963, a new guerrilla organization was created, Somali Coast Liberation Front, FLCS. Somali Coast Liberation Front. Anytime you hear the term liberation, just know in all likelihood it's a Marxist organization trained by communist Marxist advisors from Russia or then the Soviet Union back then, Cuba, China, whatever the case may be. The Somali Coast Liberation Front, FLCS, sponsored by the new Somali government, their proclaimed goal was to liberate the small French territory and connect it to Somalia. In 1967, French Somaliland was officially renamed the French territory of Afars and Issas, TFAI. I'll read that again. In 1967, French Somaliland was officially renamed the French territory of Afars and Issas, TFAI. 3 years later, in 1970, the FLCS launched its first terrorist attack, bombing a bar in Djibouti City, the capital of TFAI. Between 1974 and 1975, violent demonstrations for independence occurred in the country, organized by the FLCS militants. In 1975, the same organization kidnapped the French ambassador in Somalia to be exchanged later for two imprisoned FLCS members. On December 31, 1975, pre-negotiations regarding the independence of TFAI were held in Paris between French and TFAI officials. On January 30, 1976, TFAI officials made a formal complaint to the Organization of African Unity against Somalia. They asked Somali government to change their negative an obstructionist attitude towards the TFAI. February 3, 1976, 31 French children kidnapped. In the morning of February 3, 1976, a military bus driven by 19-year-old soldier Jean-Michel Dupont, interesting, the guy's surname would be Dupont of all things, left Air Base 188, a French military air base situated within the Ambouli International Airport of Djibouti City, the capital of TFAI. On board with him were 31 children between 5 and 12 years old, a French serviceman from the base. At 7:15 a.m., the bus was attacked and hijacked by four armed FLCS militants dressed up as women. They ordered the bus driver to go to Loyada, a small village located on the TFAI-Somalia border, about 11 miles southeast of Djibouti. Loyada was the only official border crossing with Somalia at the time. The militants with the hijacked bus had to pass a checkpoint on the 9-mile-long, 14-kilometer barbed wire barrier, which had surrounded the whole capital since the 1966 riots. The checkpoint was occupied by a platoon of the French motorized gendarmerie led by Adjutant Viard. The kidnappers fired at the gendarmes. The platoon informed their officers about the incident and pursued the bus. Around 7:45 a.m., the bus arrived at Loyada. There, the militants were confronted by legionnaires from the 13th Foreign Legion Demi Brigade, 13EDBLE, a unit permanently stationed in the TFAI since 1962. The legionnaires were operating a checkpoint there. They negotiated with the militants until an order arrived from French officials. The bus was allowed to park in no man's land between the French and Somali territories, only a few dozen yards from the Somali border outpost. The demands of the FLCS militants were to free all imprisoned FLCS members, to annul a planned referendum in the TFAI, to end the French ruling over the TFAI. If refused, the militants are ready to kill all the kidnapped children, legionnaires and GIGN alerted. Besides the already mentioned 13DBLE, we could find in the TFAI in early 1976 also a company of the well-known 2nd Foreign Parachute Regiment from Corsica, 2nd REP, Corsica, France. Since October 1974, this regiment had been deploying on a regular basis one of its five combat companies to the TFAI to reinforce the 13th DBLE and help their comrades with carrying out military tasks in the region. When in the TFAI, 2nd REP companies were administratively attached to the 13th DBLE and became temporarily its company team, named Rotational Company, each 2nd REP company being deployed to the Horn of Africa at the time stayed there for about 6 months. This is critically important information. A lot of the people in the Special Forces podcast world, I don't know if they're not students of history or what, because I am, they didn't seem to make that connection. They were scratching their heads. Well, the 13th DBLE, they're a mechanized formation. Why would they be involved with GIGN? It didn't make sense. Well, that's because they didn't study the history. And when you look at the 2nd REP, the parachute regiment, having a company permanently embedded within 13th DBLE in Djibouti on a rotational basis. Because when I first read about this Hoss's rescue, and back in the day, long before all these podcasts with all these ex-Special Forces people and these Special Forces fanboys that never served in the military, and they just get all breathless and start hyperventilating when the subject of Special Forces comes up. Unfortunately, they're not students of history, so they wouldn't be aware of what I'm talking about now. When I read about this years ago, because I was deeply invested in studying the history of Special Forces, especially the Hoss's rescue counterterrorist elements, I came across this story and I read it from a number of different sources back in the day. So I knew that the second REP was involved, as well as the 13th EBLE continuing. And it should be borne in mind, it seems as if a Frenchman wrote this article, because some of the grammar and syntax in the English is not entirely correct, but it's good enough as far as I'm concerned. Okay, continuing. In February 1976, it was Captain Saburo and his second company, second REP, who constituted the 13th DBLE's rotational company. The unit had been deployed to the TFAI since December 1975. On February 3, French officials reacted quickly, and all French foreign legionnaires stationed in the TFAI were put on alert. Furthermore, the GIGN, National Gendarmerie Intervention Group, was alerted in France. Though nowadays an elite counter-terrorist police tactical unit, the GIGN in 1976 was relatively small. It was activated in 1974 to specialize in sensitive hostage situations. The Loyola mission was, in fact, the unit's very first operation conducted outside of France. The GIGN received an order to deploy immediately to the TFAI. Finally, in the evening, another Foreign Legion unit was alerted, the Foreign Legion Operational Group, a battalion-sized intervention force organized in Corsica in 1971. It was assigned to the reactivated 2nd REI in 1972. The GOL also received an order to be ready to deploy to the TFAI. GOL is the acronym for Foreign Legion Operational Group. Legionnaires' arrival at Loyota. The second company, 2nd REP, left the capital for Loyota in the afternoon. The company was reinforced by the reconnaissance squadron of the 13E DBLE, equipped with Panhard AML armored cars. Two snipers from the 1st Company, 13 DBLE, completed the Legionnaires present on the spot. The paratroopers from the 2nd Company, 2nd REP, entrenched themselves in a palm grove located some 270 yards from the bus. The 2nd REP and 13 DBLE snipers were set in an outpost of the local autonomous Nomad Group, a pro-French police unit consisting of local auxiliaries and French leaders. A group of 2nd REP Legionnaires was set next to the outpost. Further down, preparation. General Pierre Brassart took command of the rescue mission. A former airborne commando, General Brassart served as the chief of the TFAI French Armed Forces at that time. He established his HQ in the same palm grove as the 2nd Company REP position. A team of snipers from the GIGN arriving in the TFAI in the early morning of February 4 joined the mission. The team consisted of 9 men, 8 snipers led by Lieutenant Pruteau, the founder of the GIGN unit and its first commander. The GIGN snipers were equipped with FR-F1 rifles. They positioned themselves about 90 yards in front of the 2nd REP Legionnaires. Having been stationed at Loyola since the morning of February 3, the platoon of the motorized gendarmerie, led by Adjutant Viard, completed the present French forces. Equipped with the same AMLs as the 13 DBLE squadron, the motorized gendarmes stayed behind the GNA outpost, some 900 yards away from the bus. Somali army troops positioned themselves behind the barbed wire on the Somali side of the border. Their weapons, including machine guns, were aimed at French positions. An unspecified number of FLCS militants were also present at the Somali border. Some of them would reinforce the militants in the bus during the night. February 4, 1976, rescue operation. The French waited for a moment for all militants in the bus to be up and visible. Then a GIGN team could shoot them without the risk of inciting them to take revenge on the children. At 3:45 p.m., an order was given to rescue the children. GIGN snipers fired coordinated shots to kill the kidnappers. In response, the Somali guns opened fire. This was a signal for the paratroopers. The 2nd REP Legionnaires launched a frontal attack and ran forward under enemy fire. They were designated to ensure the rescue of the children and to eliminate the Somali gunfire. Lieutenant Doucet's 1st Platoon ran into a grove on the Somali side from which an MG-42 fired, but the lieutenant in the lead was wounded, and thus it was Staff Sergeant Raoul who would continue the assault with energy. Right next to them, in the center, the 2nd Platoon with Staff Sergeant Gérard was running to storm the bus with the children, supported from the GNA post by Legion snipers of Lieutenant Andrew. Corporals Larking and Lamont entered the vehicle and quickly neutralized two militants who had escaped the GIGN fire. Simultaneously, 13th DBLE AMLs darted forward to help the 2nd REP men to eliminate the Somali fire. The GM platoon moved to the GNA outpost to be ready there as a reserve unit. At 4:05 p.m., the rescue operation was over. 1976 Loyada rescue mission results. All militants who were responsible for kidnapping the children were killed. Other FLCS militants, as well as at least one Somali troop, which had opened fire at Legionnaires and French positions, were neutralized too. Unfortunately, a little girl was killed by a gunburst. Five children were wounded and two of them seriously. A boy went missing. It was later discovered that he had been kidnapped by militants to Somalia. Results: seven Somali FLCS militants were killed. A Somali soldier was killed. 20 FLCS militants and Somali troops were wounded. So that's how it devolved. And the way the GIGN did it was they had their snipers aiming at the terrorists, and there was four of them inside the bus. And what the commander decided was, we'll only take the shot simultaneously. Each sniper that has a militant in his sights would say, for example, one, and then another sniper would say two, which meant that the second person was acquired in the gun sight. Number three, oops, child stood up, okay, stop. Then they do it again, okay? Target one, target two, target three. And finally, when all four targets were acquired at the same time by the snipers, only then did they cut loose. That way they felt they'd be able to minimize the number of casualties amongst the hostage children. So as soon as that fourth terrorist was acquired in the gun sight of the GIGN snipers, they all cut loose simultaneously. One, two, three, four, bang. That was it. So, point being is, this unit, GIGN, has worked with both the 13th DBLE and the French Foreign Legion in an active overseas operation. And again, I point out, GIGN has rescued over 600 hostages over the years. The GIGN has been used to rescue hostages in New Caledonia. They've been used against Somalis offshore of Somalia in the Gulf of Aden. They've been used in Libya and a number of other places. They're not strictly a domestic force. They've been used to secure embassies and consulates overseas. So when people balk at the idea of the GIGN being used overseas, well, I just told you back in February 1976 that they'd already been used overseas. And then if you look at their counterpart, who they've worked with a lot in the past, trained with, the German GSG-9, Grenzschutzgruppe 9, the 9th Border Guard of the Federal Police. If you look at GSG-9 as a model, if you will, it was formed largely in part by the Israelis, actually. Had a lot to do with the creation of GSG-9 after what happened in Munich. I won't even get started on that. But GSG-9 has been used overseas. They've gone into, operatives of GSG-9 have gone into Iran after the Islamic Revolution. They went in with a team of ex-Foreign Legion, ex-SAS, not ex-SAS, but current active duty SAS, and SBS, Special Boat Service. You can read about this in a classic book called The Tehran Contract. And it turned out that the plan was set up, the whole idea was conceived by the Israelis, Mossad. Very interesting. Point being is that GSG-9 member had been used in Iran. So just as you see cooperation between the terrorist groups of that era, the Italian Red Brigades, the German Red Army faction, the German Bader-Meinhof gang, the splinter Palestinian terrorist groups, most likely under control, they worked with Action Direct. They worked with the Spanish ETA. They work with the IRA. So there was international relations, international cooperation amongst the various terrorist groups. So it was only natural that French intelligence, German intelligence, the BND, they would work together to thwart this terrorism threat. And their counter-terrorist units had worked together. For example, the Italian Red Brigades would conduct operations throughout Europe, not just in Italy. And likewise, the German Red Army faction, the French Action Directe, all of Europe was a battlefield. And they were aided by the Soviets. They were aided by other East Bloc, Warsaw Pact countries like Bulgaria, what have you. The Libyans, they set up training camps, terrorist training camps in the desert. At least on the surface level, where the lead was hot and where people actually shot each other, not behind the scenes where strings were being pulled, but at the ground level, this required, like I just said, an international effort. There are cases of British intelligence tracking IRA weapons shipments through Europe, and they would work with the French if the consignment was being brought through French territory first, and then when the consignment was brought across into Germany, for whatever reason, the Germans would get involved. There's another book written by that same author. Actually, his name is Gale Rivers, the guy who wrote Tehran Contract. One of his books was called The Specialist: Revelations of a Professional Counterterrorist. And he talks about it's an anthology of all of his different jobs, a lot of his different jobs for different governments. The US government, the British government, the Spanish government, worked with the Germans. And he talks about a mission where he worked with a couple of mercenaries he recruited, he knew very well. One was a former French paratrooper with links to the Corsican mafia, and the other guy was a former member of the French Foreign Legion, and they tracked an IRA weapons consignment in a lorry, a big rig, across Europe, involving the French governments and the German governments, because of where the cargo was going. This is what I mean by an international response. The hostage rescue of a hijacked airliner that set the model for modern-day counter-terrorist hostage rescues was GSG-9's successful anti-hijacking operation in Mogadishu. Once again, Somalia plays into the picture. There were actually two members of the British Special Air Service that were on that team that stormed that airplane. The officer was Alastair Morrison, a veteran of the war in Oman, and the non-commissioned officer was Sergeant Barry Davis. Alastair Morrison was advising GSG-9 on how to go about doing the hostage rescue. Of course, GSG-9 had pretty good ideas of their own. SAS and GSG-9 had cross-trained with each other, and GSG-9 liked the stun grenades. So when Alastair Morrison and Sergeant Barry Davis joined the German GSG-9 team led by their founder, legendary commander Ulrich Wegener, they worked out a plan whereby once the door was forced open, Sergeant Barry Davis would chuck in the stun grenades and then fall flat on the ground or on the plane, and then the team, the GSG-9 team, would literally run over his back and go on the plane and rescue the hostages, and that's what happened. If you've ever seen the videos, the film footage of the British SAS B Squadron taking down the Iranian embassy in London, you will notice that they were using Heckler and Koss MP5s. Well, they got the idea of using the MP5s from GSG-9 when they had stormed the airplane in Mogadishu. This is what I mean by international cooperation. Not many people know that at Waco, there were actually British SAS representatives watching that whole horrific fiasco where all those people were burnt up, those women and children. That's a whole nother story. Point again, relevance is that they work together. So if they're going to do that at the surface level, why wouldn't they work and cooperate with each other at the deep black, deep state level? When you're talking about corporations, multinationals like DuPont, like Dassault. That is the deep state. That is the world government. So that is who Candace is up against. She's up against Dassault. She's up against DuPont. Those are mega, mega power hitters in the world government, global control scheme of things. Like I said, DuPont built the plants, the gigantic industrial plants to create and separate plutonium, separate plutonium from the uranium. Dassault makes some of the most advanced fighter planes in the world. They're not just a commercial business aircraft company. They make advanced weapon systems. That's who the foes are in this instance. So keep all that in mind when you think about what's going on. People get all distracted by the Egyptian plane, where it came from. But look at the infrastructure. Look who manufactured the plane. Look who's got the maintenance contract with the plane, and the technicians, and probably the pilots. All these major aircraft companies have their own air crews. They have their own test pilots. And some of these test pilots are the best in the world. They can lay in a whole logistical infrastructure, these corporations, like Dassault, like DuPont, like Halliburton, like Bechtel, etc. So keep all that in mind as this all develops. We'll see more information come out over time. There's forces of goodness working around her, and up to this point anyway, protecting her. So let's see how this all plays out. And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, thank you for listening to Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars, and we'll see you again. Bye for now.